In a world obsessed with quick fixes and self-improvement, Thomas More offers a radical alternative. What if our emotional struggles aren't problems to solve, but invitations to depth and meaning? Drawing from his background as a former monk and psychotherapist, More challenges us to stop trying to cure our lives and instead care for our souls through everyday details, our homes, schedules, even the clothes we wear. Unlike conventional therapy that aims to eliminate problems, soul care involves observing and honoring whatever wanders in our psychic fields, much like a shepherd tends sheep. This approach recognizes that the soul isn't a thing, but a quality, depth, value, heart, personal substance that connects to the world's soul through nature and culture. When we rush to cure our symptoms, we miss their profound messages. Even painful conditions like depression or addiction reveal the soul's expression, asking not for elimination, but for understanding. The paradox? Our forceful pursuit of change often prevents deeper transformation. Family relationships aren't problems to fix, but stories to understand. When avoiding our parents' patterns, we often create repression. David avoided intimate relationships while trying not to be like his wandering father. By exploring his father's story without judgment, David discovered a complicated man with similar childhood experiences, leading to unexpected alchemy in their relationship. Family members can be viewed as imaginal figures representing archetypal roles. Homer's Odyssey provides insight into fatherhood through Odysseus's journey home, a dangerous odyssey representing how fathers are made through life's ordeals. What if we approached our families not as problems, but as myths? When we extract the mythic dimensions from family histories, literal persons become characters in a great saga. This perspective extends to understanding ourselves. Our culture condemns self-love while promoting self-esteem, a contradiction suggesting narcissism might contain something valuable. When Narcissus sees his reflection in a pristine pool, he becomes mesmerized by an image he doesn't recognize as himself. This moment marks narcissism's potential healing, moving from self-preoccupation to genuine reflection. The pool represents depth and imagination where we discover unfamiliar aspects of ourselves. True narcissism isn't about giving the ego too much attention, but failing to discover the inner pool where deeper self-knowledge awaits. The secret is to transform self-absorption into self-knowledge by learning to love ourselves as other. We approach love, seeking healing and completion, yet often encounter painful gaps instead. Perhaps growth comes from embracing the darkness and hollowness that are mysteriously necessary in love. The tale of Tristan and Isolde shows how sadness completes love's saturation of the soul. As George Bataille notes, every love involves transgression, and soul is to be found in the vicinity of taboo. Consider Marianne, who left her seemingly good marriage only to feel jealousy when her husband adjusted well. After 3 months, she returned and now thrives without thoughts of leaving. Her story demonstrates how separation, though seemingly opposed to love, can be integral to its fullness. Our artistic heritage portrays love as a blindfolded child, inherently inadequate, finding its essence in incompleteness. This complexity extends to jealousy and envy, which contain creative potential beneath our distaste. If gods experience jealousy, these feelings must be archetypal rather than mere personal insecurity. When jealousy enters consciousness, it introduces us to new perspectives on love's demands. Similarly, envy's purpose isn't elimination, but guidance toward our own fate. Like physical pain, it signals something needing attention, our inability to see what's closest to us. Envy represents hyperopia of the soul, seeing others' lives clearly while missing the value in our own. Rather than fighting these difficult emotions, we might benefit from their guidance. In our light-obsessed society, depression appears as an enemy. Yet centuries ago, melancholy was identified with Saturn. To be depressed was to be in Saturn. As the old man who presided over the Golden Age, Saturn connects depression with nostalgia and awareness of passing time. Depression grants the gift of experience, a sense of having lived through something, becoming older and wiser. As god of the harvest, Saturn brings death imagery into depression. People often feel life is over, hopes unfounded, cherished truths sinking into Saturn's black earth. Care of the soul requires accepting this dying. Depression creates holes in our neat theories, a necessary process that Nicholas of Cusa recognized as learning of ignorance. Even in severe depression, inner construction may be taking place while outer life appears empty. Consider Bill, a priest dismissed after 30 years of service. His depression served as a corrective to his naivete, giving him strength to see the villains in his life clearly. When his depression lifted, he found new work as both counselor and priest, now able to help people face their dark feelings. This wisdom extends to our physical bodies. The human body is the soul in its richest form, yet modern medicine focuses solely on cure, abstracting the body into chemistries that hide its inherent poetry. Drawing on Ferenczi's concept of organ eroticism, each body part has its own personality and takes pleasure in its activities. Disease represents a loss of pleasure, the body failing to find its enjoyment. Our current diseases might be the body asserting itself against cultural numbing, stomachs rejecting processed foods, hearts resisting being treated as pumps. Ancient Greeks taught that the god who heals is the same god who brought the disease. We don't cure diseases. They cure us by restoring our religious participation in life. The great malady of our time is loss of soul. When soul is neglected, it manifests in obsessions, addictions, violence, and loss of meaning. In our modernist thinking, technology becomes the metaphor for psychological problems. We assume the psyche has spare parts, an owner's manual, and therapist mechanics. An inverse relationship exists between information and wisdom. Despite abundant information about healthy living, we've lost our sense of the body's wisdom. We know global events, but lack wisdom in addressing world problems. Even with extensive psychology training, we face a dearth of wisdom about soul mysteries. Care of the soul might include recovering formal religion in intellectually satisfying ways, like Dionysus journeying to Hades to resurrect a dead poet. We need to recover depth in understanding our experiences, using language equal to life's complexity. Living artfully might mean pausing to connect intimately with things. Dream work is crucial. Rather than immediately interpreting dreams, we should let them guide us into new territory. The Greeks called these guiding spirits daemons, autonomous beings arising from imagination. Care of soul isn't about self-improvement or escaping troubles. We honor soul by giving it time to reveal itself, living with depth and interiority. Soul thrives on deeper pleasures and complexity over fear. By caring for soul daily, we allow our full genius to emerge, the philosopher's stone of rich personality or the peacock's tail of brilliance. In an efficiency-obsessed world, perhaps the most revolutionary act is slowing down to attend to the soul's quiet voice speaking through our everyday lives.